You know, it's my great pleasure right now to introduce to everybody a man who really needs no introduction.
Carl.
Dragon.
King.
I'm not calling the fans geeks. I'm not calling them rednecks, tobacco chewing nothing, because I've done all that myself.
Carl.
Dragon.
King.
Carl.
In your dreams, you will see me.
Excuse me, please, let's don't talk negatively.
I'm going to win the title. I'm going to keep my money and buy me some good old Tennessee drinking whiskey with it.
Thank you for being such a great husband.
And this is for you, Fannie Mae. Solid gold, baby, just like you and me.
Hey, everybody. This is Carl Stern here, and I've got a couple questions for you. Do you ever get frustrated that you can't watch certain live sports events because they aren't televised or available in your country? With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a country that is showing the sports event you want to watch so you don't miss out and can watch the action live. You may have heard VPNs are great for online protection, but they slow down your internet speed. Luckily, NordVPN is the fastest VPN in the world. You won't even notice it's running, so you can stream and game online with no buffering or lagging. Furthermore, NordVPN prevents your internet service provider from bandwidth throttling, so you can have a consistently reliable internet connection. It's the price of a cup of coffee every month, a small price to pay for premium cybersecurity and access to a vast amount of entertaining content from all over the world. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/F4W to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan for 4 months free. Is completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Let me tell you that link again. It's nordvpn.com/F4W.
Hey, everybody. Carl Stern here for the Dragon King Carl Classic Wrestling Audio Show at WrestlingObserver.com, Figure4Online.com, or if you're listening to this from my website, it's the When It Was Cool Wrestling Podcast. Thank you very much for joining me. This is part three of our annual examination of the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame ballot. I have been a voter in the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame for, well, as long as they've had votes in it, many, many years, well over a decade, whatever it is, I guess over 15 years now, I've voted in it. As a historian, Dave sent me a ballot for many, many years. And every year, one of our most popular shows is where I dissect the ballot, look at the various different candidates, and give you my thoughts and feelings about them. The previous two shows, I encourage you to listen to those as I covered the ones that will be dropped off the list next year. There are three of them, Sergeant Slaughter, Enrique Torres, and Rocky Johnson. I go in depth about my thoughts on them. Then there is the historical performer era candidates and the modern performer era candidates, which we've talked about all of those now so far. And this third and final show in this series, we're going to look at the various international candidates and the non-wrestlers as well. So just a real quick recap without recapping too much. I will sit down and make my ballot up in a couple of weeks. I'll do some more research and some more statistic gathering. There is a Twitter account called Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame Tracker that is great about gathering statistics that I like to study before making my final ballot. But just off the top of my head, some of the ones I'm kind of bullish on right now in a positive manner, considering for my ballot are, and by the way, before I say this year we have a lot of new candidates, including a lot of new tag teams. This year has revamped the way we look at tag teams, and I think that's good and about time. And so I'm probably going to be pretty tag team heavy this year because I feel like it's underrepresented, and the way it's largely been viewed before, I think, was unfair toward tag teams. We'll talk about that a little more this episode. I'm going to call it the Robert Gibson paradox, and I'll talk about that coming up. But there were some rule changes, so go back to episode 1 if you want to hear about all that. But so far, I'm kind of bullish, very bullish, I guess, on Sergeant Slaughter with a bit of an asterisk after his. little bit positive on the British Bulldogs, Dynamite Kid and Davey Boy Smith. I am positive toward the Hart Foundation, Bret Hart and Jim Neidhart. I am 100% positive, absolutely. I think the strongest contenders on this whole ballot are the newly added tag team of Argentina Roca and Miguel Perez. No question, statistically speaking, historically speaking, they are, again, I think the best candidates on this whole thing. I am pretty strong, and I know I'm an outlier on this for the most part, but I'm pretty strong on Bill Goldberg. There are others I'm kind of mediocre on. As far as the ones I'm absolutely cold on, no way, no how, not going to happen, would be, let's see if any of them jump out as just an absolute no on my part. Mongolian Stomper, love Mongolian Stomper, but the case just isn't there. Let's see here. I would say The Rocker, Shawn Michaels, and Marty Jannetty are under the threshold. As far as I wouldn't say cold on them, but not going to. Mr. Wrestling 1 and 2, well below my threshold. Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson with J.J. Dillon. I'm just every year I'm gobsmacked by them coupled with J.J. Dillon on here. If they take J.J. Dillon off, so you could also consider Bobby Heenan and their time in WWF, well, then maybe I would spend more time thinking about it. But just shoehorning him into that one very specific small time period, it's just no. Randy Orton's a no to me. All right, so let's go now. Let's get to the next section. I follow Wrestling in Japan candidates. Now, a few times, I voted in the Japan category when I was following Japan and researching Japanese wrestling history. I've been kind of out of the Japanese wrestling loop for a good little while now and haven't really spent much time in the last few years, so I will not be voting in that category. So that doesn't hurt, you know, or help in either way. I just don't. You know, people, it's my firm belief, and I feel this way about real world politics as well. If you don't know what's going on, don't vote. I'm not one of those people that says everybody should vote. No, I think if you're ignorant and don't know what you're talking about, you shouldn't vote. So I am ignorant and shouldn't be voting for Japan, and I'm not going to. But your candidates there are, we've got the tag team of Riki Choshu and Animal Hamaguchi, Sima, Satoshi Kojima and Hiroyoshi Tenzan. I will say this about that. I'm not high on Kojima and Tenzan. They had a little too much ha-ha in their act. I really never was a big fan of their whole deal. I like Tenzan as a singles wrestler. There's even times in Kojima's career I liked him as well. But I don't know, and this is just my opinion. Again, as a novice to this era of Japanese wrestling, but I always, every time I watched them, I just felt like they were cosplaying pro wrestlers. And they were wrestling like people who, like they were playing the role of a pro wrestler. And especially Kojima, I never have been a big fan of their act. Yoshiaki Fujiwara. Hayabusa's very, very interesting. I think he's a super influential candidate. A lot of people could criticize him, and maybe rightfully so, for being a Sabu knockoff, and I feel he was a Sabu knockoff. I mean, he was basically FMW's answer to Sabu, having their own version of him. And his recklessness, which again cost him a severe injury that ultimately cost him his life. But as far as his in-ring style goes, he was very influential. I know one of the people that writes periodically for whenitwascool.com, Juan Nunez, he's very high, has been in the past, on Hayabusa and makes a pretty good case for him. So you Japanese section voters may, you know, want to really take a good close look at Hayabusa and see he's been on the ballot for a few years. Kota Ibushi, I think, yeah, is one of the ones that a lot of people feel is a shoe-in, and certainly what I've seen of Kota Ibushi is very impressive, and I don't see any argument as far as in-ring work goes. Now, I can't crunch the numbers for you on drawing power and things like that for Kota Ibushi. I haven't followed Japanese wrestling like that, but I know this. He's been one of the best wrestlers in the world. So it's be watching with interest to see if he ends up getting voted in. The tag team of Antonio Inoki and Seiji Sakaguchi, very influential. I mean, very famous team, very high-level, high-drawing team. Way before I started watching wrestling, certainly even further back before I started watching Japanese wrestling. So I'll let those who have studied Japanese wrestling, make the determination on Inoki and Sakaguchi, but it just seems as a gut reaction to me. That seems like a team that should be in there, right? Tomohiro Ishii, Naomichi Marufuji. I know very little about their careers. I've obviously seen them, obviously know who they are, obviously know they're very well respected. I think I've even heard some people say, call Ishii and a no-brainer candidate. I personally, I don't know. Maybe they are, so I'll be interested to see if they end up getting voted in. Tetsuya Naito, again, another one of the more modern era performers that I'm less familiar with. Miko Satomura, couldn't tell you nothing about their career at all. So that's why I don't vote in the Japanese wrestling category. I don't know. I followed Japanese wrestling mostly in the 1980s, late 1980s, and through that really All Japan Wrestling heyday there in the early to mid 1990s, your Stan Hansen, Steve Williams, Mitsuharu Misawa era, Toshiaki Kawada, that whole era, that was my absolute favorite. And then I got hot on it again back when New Japan kind of had their revival with Kenny Omega and Okada and all that. I was pretty pretty high on it for a little bit. Hiroyoshi Tenzan and Satoshi Kojima, that's when I really got to see most of their work, and relatively unimpressed with it. But that's kind of the era I've watched. So I don't have the background or knowledge to be voting in that category, really. Let's see here. We have Shingo Takagi, Manami Toyota, and Toshio Yamada. And again, I would refer to our friend Juan Nunez on that. He would be able to tell you everything there is to know about Manami Toyota and Toshio Yamada. Certainly seems like Hall of Famers. Just knee-jerk reaction. But and then there's one more tag team there for the Japan category, Akira Taue and Toshiaki Kawada. All right, let's go to Mexico, which is a zone I'm a little more familiar with. And by the way, I'm sure Adam and Mike with the Big Audio Nightmare will break down in a great deal of the Japanese candidates. And I'd listen to them. That's who I would recommend getting your voting feel of the Japanese category for. They're going to be far, far more intelligent and educated about that than I am. So let's go to Mexico, and I have voted more frequently in the Mexican category of being a fan of Lucha Libre wrestling. I won't call myself a historian of Lucha Libre wrestling, but I am a fan of historical Lucha Libre wrestling. I've mostly researched El Santo and some of his contemporaries and stuff. So some of the other names, and again, we're kind of hampered by a lack of video from back then. Like, for instance, Angel Blanco and Dr. Wagner. I mean, I can tell you they were huge names. I can tell you they had huge matches. I've seen very little footage of them as a tag team. In fact, what little I've seen of Angel Blanco, he looks like he was a very good wrestler. In fact, in my opinion, based on what little bit I've seen, he was better than most of the luchadors from that time period, as was Dr. Wagner, I've actually seen a little less footage of than Angel Blanco, but seems to me like they have a lot of the credentials there as a tag team, so it's going to be cool to see what they got. I don't think I'm going to be voting in the Mexico category this time because it's been a little while since I've really sat down and truly dove into the Mexican wrestling history. Maybe for next year. I may spend the next year kind of refreshing my memory and studying up on some Lucha Libre stuff. But we also have Sangre Chicana. On the ballot for several years is the trios of Los Hermanos Dinamita, the Cien Caras Mascara Año 2000, Universo 2000, Universo 2000. You know, they're very borderline candidates, I have to admit. They weren't the best workers in the world. Very popular, very well entrenched in Lucha Libre culture. They seem to me like a very Dick Murdoch level. You know, could they be in? Sure. Would people complain if they were in? Some might, but I don't think it'd be just a huge outcry. But yet they haven't made it in much. Doral Dixon is interesting because Dory Dixon, certainly I've always associated him with, you know, the time spent in Mexico and whatever, but I don't myself have a lot of firsthand knowledge of that beyond what Dave has said about him. But I saw something that Steve Yoey had posted or wrote about it and really just eviscerated Doral Dixon as any kind of Lucha Libre candidate. And, you know, he didn't go into great detail or depth. He just really was dismissive of him, really was dismissive. Apparently, I guess the two have had a falling out or something. Dave and Steve Yoey had been, I guess, friends forever, it seemed like. And Steve Yoey is a tremendous wrestling historian who I respect very much. And if he says something, I generally take it pretty much as gospel truth. And but, man, he was very dismissive what I read toward Doral Dixon, so... I will say this, he probably knows more about it than I do, so even though I don't know, you know, one way or the other, I have to kind of, that makes me pay attention. But again, I'm not voting in Mexico this year, so Parada Morgan, okay. Mystico / Caristico is a very divisive candidate. I know there are people that argue, oh, yes, he is a no-brainer for Mexico and whatever. Man, he was red hot, but for such a short period of time. And then he completely just washed out here in the U.S. I mean, but, you know, again, you're not voting for his U.S. work, I don't guess. You're voting for his Mexican work. And I've had plenty of people. I think Juan is a very high and positive on Mystico. In there, so, but he's, you know, he hasn't got voted in yet, so a lot of people apparently aren't, you know, the numbers are there, aren't there for him yet. Elio Del Santo and Octagon, that's interesting because both of those guys were tremendous. Elio Del Santo, certainly a Hall of Famer, no question. I think maybe even Octagon's in as a singles wrestler, not sure, but as a tag team, because I don't really... No, I should know more about them as a tag team than I should. I mean, obviously, I have seen some of their bigger matches and stuff. I recently YouTubed as much as I could find on there. But, like, how long? Like, how long were they? I feel like there was a lot that wasn't in your mainstream on, you know, like, Galavision, you know, that I didn't get to see. So, I need to know more because I like Elio Del Santo. Now, later on in his career, he got a little slow and a little lazy. But, man, early on, he was dynamite. I really liked him. And I liked the idea and the style of Octagon. You know, he had kind of that martial arts sort of style to him and stuff. So that was always fun to watch. The AAA, our second version of La Parca, not L.A. Park, who I pretty sure is already in, but La Parca, the gentleman who passed away, I guess, year before last, is up, and he's an interesting candidate. I mean, I think he's right there. I have in the past voted for Hurricane Ramirez because he's one of the Lucha Libre movie star legend characters that wasn't in, along with, you know, El Santo and Blue Demon and Mil Máscaras and even like Raul de Jalisco and people like that. Hurricane Ramirez remained kind of the long lone holdout. And Hurricane Ramirez, unlike the others who were Lucha Libre wrestling stars and then became movie stars, it was the opposite with Hurricane Ramirez. Hurricane Ramirez was started as a star for the movies and became a wrestler. And there were multiple people that played Hurricane Ramirez, which makes it difficult to narrow down. The Hurricane Rana, which, you know, famously the Frankensteiner, whatever you want to call it, popularized by one Hurricane Ramirez. So there is, you know, his positive historical influence, I would certainly say so, very popular, but there's a lot of caveats to it. And while I have in the past voted for Hurricane Ramirez, I have to admit he's borderline. And on this ballot where I've talked about we're now allowed this year 18, I don't think he makes that 18. I mean, on a ballot that's closer, he would be. But again, I'm not voting in Mexico this year, so it's irrelevant what I think about it. But for those of you who are wondering or are voting for Mexico, he's been on there a while. He's been on the ballot for a long time. I don't see anything this year that's suddenly been a Hurricane Ramirez renaissance or anything. So, and then Los Villanos, I guess this is all of them, you know, all of them together, 1 through 5. And of course, we just recently saw, what was it, 4 that lost his mask. They're all either have passed away or are of retirement age now. And so I suppose it's time to start considering Los Villanos as get serious about whether we want them in the Hall of Fame or not. So that's definitely a conversation to have. And then Rito Romero seems like you hear that name and you think, well, gosh, he's already in, right? I mean, Rito Romero's got to be in the Observer Hall of Fame. Well, no, still on the ballot as a matter of fact. I don't know what to think about Rito Romero. He had, you know, success not just in Mexico but in the U.S. as well, Texas and Los Angeles. He was a star there. He lived to be 73 years old, so he clearly trained a lot of people and stuff. And I guess he's of the Lucha Libre wrestlers, he's one of the ones that's more well known here in the United States because he did so much work up here. He had the tag team with Black Guzman, who was El Santo's brother, and they even held like tag team championships up in Texas. So I don't know. You know, I don't know his statistics and stuff. He's a very famous name. I know that. He and Lou Thesz become really close friends in life. In fact, Lou Thesz had a lot of respect for him. In fact, he thought he was better than most of the Mexican stars down there, for whatever that's worth, if it's worth anything to you. All right, so wrestling in Europe, Australia, New Zealand, and Pacific Islands and Africa, or the everywhere else that we haven't talked about category, and we'll just run through these real quick because I'm not voting in this category either, and I want to get to the non-wrestlers in the second half of the show, spend a little time with that. We have Spiros Arion, who, here in the United States, he was best known as wrestling up there in the WWWF, but he had a lot of success elsewhere in the world. I think also in Australia is a pretty big deal. Liang Blanc, I have no idea who that is. Francisco Pino. So if you were a voter in an area where Liang Blanc was a big star, I guess your considerations. Big Daddy is always a controversial member on here. Look, Big Daddy's never getting in the Hall of Fame. He garners just enough votes to perpetually always stay on the list, but he ain't getting in. He's on there again. Dominic DiNucci, Billy Joyce, George Kidd, Killer Carl Cox. And I wonder where, is it going to be Australia that Dave slotted him in this everywhere else in the world category for Killer Carl Cox? Because Killer Carl Cox certainly doesn't rise to Hall of Fame criteria here in the United States, but I guess somewhere else maybe. Kendo Nagasaki, you know, Kendo Nagasaki is one of those names that you feel like he's so associated with British wrestling, he's got to be in, right? Well, no, he's not in, and he's never got voted in. And I always liked Kendo Nagasaki. I like the whole mysterious, you know, martial artist gimmick kind of thing. The whole, he did this whole unmasking ceremony that I thought was really cool. You know, he's very recognizable. But now, watching him week in, week out, and all that, I don't have enough experience, and I'm not voting that category anyway. But he seems like somebody that should be in, as does Jackie Paolo. I would have thought he would have been in as well. Rollerball Mark Rocco. Innovative for sure. I don't see how he's not in. I mean, he's kind of the dynamite kid of England. He had a lot of success in Japan. Just seems like somebody that should already be in there. The Royal Brothers, Burt Royal and Vic Faulkner. Johnny Saint. Johnny Saint's been on the ballot for years as well. Ricky Starr. Adrian Street, they put him back on the ballot, I guess, last year or so. And again, this is not for his work in the United States, which, you know, he was good. I liked Adrian Street, was a fan of Adrian Street. I've met Adrian Street many times. I've worked on shows with Adrian Street. Love Adrian Street. But here in the United States, his career is not up to the Hall of Fame level. He was never a huge national star. He was a mid to upper mid card wrestler in a number of territories, from Los Angeles to Memphis to certainly Continental, Mid-South. And that's all great and fine and good, but nothing Hall of Fame level here. But in the UK, he was certainly a trendsetter. He was certainly somebody known for his character and very good wrestler. So, but he didn't get in last year, and so I wonder about his chances this time. Jose Torres on the ballot. And then, of course, Otto Vons has been on for quite a while as well. And Otto Vons probably not getting in either, even though he is the name most synonymous with Austrian wrestling. All right, let's take our mid-show break right here. When we come back, we're going to talk about the non-wrestler category. I think we can vote up to 8 of these folks, and it doesn't count against our other names we may have chosen, our 18 or 15 or 18 or however many we can choose there. This doesn't count against it. There's some very interesting names on here, some very fun names. So let's take a look at them right after this. All right. One of my favorite sections here is the non-wrestler category. These are the other folks that have made us love wrestling, made us part of wrestling, been kind of the icing on the cake, but weren't themselves necessarily wrestlers. Well, many of them were wrestlers, but what they're being offered up for induction for, not necessarily for their wrestling. So let's take a look at it. Lord James Blairs, and I presume that is for Lord James Blairs, the manager and the announcer. As an announcer and a color commentator, I thought he was terrible. So I guess maybe as a manager, I don't think so. I don't see Lord James Blairs. I just don't see it as in any capacity. I don't know. Somebody make me a case for Lord James Blairs, because whatever it is, I'm baffled by whatever that case could be. Dave Brown. Dave Brown's been on the ballot for many, many years. Dave Brown, the tandem of Lance Russell and Dave Brown for Memphis Wrestling, my favorite announcing duo ever. Lance Russell is already in, as well he should be. Dave Brown, though, however, not. And look, I've had the opportunity to vote for Dave Brown. I like Dave Brown, but I don't think I've ever voted for him for the Hall of Fame. I don't think I will. He was fine. He was, but I mean, really, you know, Lance Russell was so great, and he was the Hall of Famer there. Now, it was helpful that Dave Brown had great chemistry with Lance Russell. It helped that Dave Brown was a perfectly competent, sidekick to Lance Russell. He wasn't particularly a super knowledgeable color commentator or anything. It wasn't like Dave was sitting there week after week calling double wrist locks and, you know, things like that. No, he was just helping to tell the story, and he was a good a trusted voice. I would call him a good trusted voice to work with Lance. I don't think Dave Brown's a Hall of Famer, but I love Dave Brown. Think he was great for Memphis. One of my favorites, but you know, I just don't think what he did was Hall of Fame. Him and Lance Russell together as a duo, I think should. And you know, I don't want to open up a can of worms here, but it's kind of like Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan. Those two as a duo, I'd vote for in the Hall of Fame, sure. But this is one of those deals where because we have for so long been putting people in as a solo act rather than tag team or team act, you get these great combinations that aren't going to get in. And again, if you were putting the combination of Lance Russell and Dave Brown in, I'd vote for that all day long. But Lance Russell's already in, and he was the Hall of Famer of that duo, let's just be honest. Bobby Bruns, I don't know what the case for Bobby Bruns is. I guess make the case, because I'm not sure what it would be. Bob Caudle, again, he's kind of sort of falls in that same Dave Brown category. Bob Caudle's lovable. Gosh, you just can't help but like Bob Caudle. He was great to hear. He was a friendly voice, trusted voice. A Hall of Famer, you know, if you're having a nice guy Hall of Fame, of course, you put Bob Caudle in all day long. But I don't see, you know, I don't see he was it a trendsetter, a groundbreaker. Nothing he did was in and above the level of, you know, a dozen other, you know, co-announcers throughout the territorial system. I just don't see it. And as much as I like Bob Caudle, you know, I'd certainly put him in the Dragon King Carl Hall of Fame all day long. I just don't see he has the criteria here. Bobby Davis. I'm surprised Bobby Davis didn't get in last year. Bobby Davis, in my opinion, is one of the real overlooked exclusions from the Hall of Fame. I will certainly be voting for Bobby Davis, a landmark, groundbreaking manager. You know, without Bobby Davis, do you get people like Bobby Heenan? Do you get, you know, your managers of the heyday of wrestling? I don't know. Maybe, but Bobby Davis was certainly a groundbreaker and great. What little footage we have of him out there, he seems fantastic and charismatic and articulate and irritating and all those great things you would want. I certainly feel like Bobby Davis is absolutely, I mean, he's a pioneer manager in wrestling. I voted for Bobby Davis last year, and I'm voting for him again this year. Joe Higuchi, I'm surprised he hasn't got in. He's a, you know, one of the most famous referees ever anywhere. I don't know. Why not Joe Higuchi? Jim Johnson. I've voted for Jim Johnson before, and I've not voted for Jim Johnson before. Music is a very important part of wrestling, especially that WWF music from the 80s and 90s, iconic stuff. Jim Johnson was very much involved in that, a very important part. He's not got the votes, so I've always been on the ballot for a few years, and I'm certainly going to consider voting for him again, since especially this category doesn't count against my others. When I think about the iconic music that Jim Johnston was involved with, you think about those soundtracks of WWF entrance music. Look, I mean, I think that's an important part. A lot of people are mad that Bill Apter, you know, from the Apter magazines got in. They say, well, you know, Stanley Weston should be. And maybe, yeah, maybe in hindsight you should have put in Bill Apter and Stanley Weston as a duo. And I'd vote for that. I think the magazines are given far too little credit amongst the, quote, smarks and newsletter writers and the voters for the Hall. I think they're given way too little credit. Because out here in the rural areas, let me tell you, the magazines were king. There are so many people that are passionate fans of pro wrestling, myself included, and many others. You probably listen to some of their podcasts. People like Mike Sempervivi and Chris Zellner and so many others that are, you know, Bo James and Mark Cole, and so many that people that do podcasts today who cover wrestling, who are fans of wrestling, maybe some people that have been involved in wrestling, were there and so deeply entrenched and involved because of the newsstand magazines that I think dismissing them is just disingenuous or a complete misunderstanding of their value. I know Dave really doesn't think much of the newsstand magazines, but we got to quit letting just Dave set, you know, think for everybody. Think for yourself a little bit, too. And I know good and well many, many, many people who the newsstand magazines were a very, very important part of their pro wrestling fandom. Many people who later become very successful, even Hall of Fame pro wrestlers, because of the magazines. So, you know, I'm sorry it's not your little niche and you don't understand it, but it's super important. And I feel the same way about music. So I think Jim Johnston is certainly well worth looking at. Larry Matisick, before Larry Matisick passed away, I'd talked to him several times, had him on the Dragon King show a few times and stuff, like Larry Matisick. But, you know, I think he's a little below the criteria there. Certainly as a promoter, yes. As an announcer, you know, you can make a case for him, I think. He's a smart guy, very likable guy, but he's been on there for a while. James Melby is somebody I think we should be voting for. I think I voted for him last year, and I'll be voting for him this year. Again, for all the reasons I just, you know, went on ranting about the magazines and so forth, I think it's owed to James Melby. You know, just ask yourself, was he part of my wrestling fandom? Was he part an important part of wrestling fandom? And I think the answer is yes. And that's for him. So, Rossi Ogawa, I know so little about, I can't even say. So, I don't know. Maybe so. I've read some stuff here recently that says absolutely, but I don't know enough myself. It's not my area of expertise. Reggie Parks, that's interesting. Upon what consideration? Not as a wrestler. I mean, he's not even in that category. So, and then certainly he didn't do anything in his career to be a Hall of Famer for wrestling. He's a good wrestler, mind you, but not Hall of Fame. As a referee, as a belt maker, I presume as a belt maker. So that's interesting. And man, there, you know, hey, belt collecting, wrestling belts were a very important part of wrestling. Hey, I was a belt mark back before I knew what that was. Back in the day, you know, when I was a youngster watching Southeastern Championship Wrestling, man, yeah, you know, me and all my friends were about, man, you know, the old Southeastern Championship belt with the crown on top, that's awesome looking. You know, every time, you know, the 10 pounds of gold that Ric Flair had and then later replaced by the big gold belt. All these belts were important. They were all part of wrestling. And Reggie Parks has many of the greatest designs ever. Reggie Parks would be somebody that I would consider voting for because I do think it's an important part of wrestling. Morris Siegel, pretty strong candidate is Morris Siegel, especially now here we get into the, do we vote on, do we go by the low watermark rule? Boy, there's a lot of people that are upset that Don Owen got in last year. And he has become a problematic member. So does now every promoter above Don Owen, should they rightfully be in the Hall of Fame? If so, then you got to vote Morris Siegel. If you voted for Don Owen to be in the Hall of Fame, you need to then, I think, vote for Morris Siegel and any of the other promoters that were more successful and more influential than Don Owen. That's just my opinion. So others say, no, we shouldn't let the least qualified person, set the bar for getting in. I don't know. It's up to each individual voter and stuff, but I say in a Hall of Fame where Don Owen exists, Morris Siegel also needs to. Tony Schiavone is very interesting. I know Dave has historically not been that big a fan of Tony Schiavone. I always liked Tony. I liked Tony Schiavone back in the day. I like Tony Schiavone now. I've often liked Tony Schiavone. Tony Schiavone, kind of, he sort of, He has Sergeant Slaughter syndrome, in that a lot of people judge him based on his worst years, which were the time he hated being in WCW when it was a terrible company to be at. If I would have worked there at the time, I probably would have hated it too. But millions and millions of people saw him during that time period and judged him to be a poor announcer. So he's got to deal with that. And he's been on the ballot for a while. He's kind of certainly had a career renaissance in the last few years. Would I vote for Tony Schiavone in the Hall of Fame? I would consider it. I mean, he's not, to me, just a slam dunk, got to be in there candidate or nothing. But I would consider him in there. I like Tony Schiavone. And when I think about, in my mind, when I think about a wrestling, you know, scene that I loved or something, a lot of times it's Tony Schiavone's voice there commentating that scene. I mean, he was there at the heyday of Jim Crockett Promotions during some of its best times. So I think, you know, he's the one narrating the story, and quite frankly, did a pretty good job with it. George Scott, I say no to George Scott. I think George Scott was a very overrated booker. I think he gets a lot of credit for stuff he actually didn't do, and I've never been that hot on George Scott. Sanshiro Takagi, couldn't tell you, no clue. I mean, I know who he is, obviously, but I don't know really what his Hall of Fame case would be. If somebody wants to make that, by all means, I'll read it here on the show and educate us all. But beats me. Couldn't tell you what his case is. Mike Tenay, Mike Tenay's one of the most knowledgeable people in wrestling, but he's never been that. I mean, what was his biggest claim to fame as an announcer? I mean, it was when he was with TNA, right? I mean, you know, obviously his time with WCW, but he was never the head guy. He was never the head storyteller. He was never, I mean, that's not necessarily his fault. I think he got kind of a raw deal in some of that. He should have been at times. So, I mean, I love Mike Tenay, and Mike Tenay's great and all that. But, I mean, what can you say about him? He's the best thing about the worst promotion. I don't know. Not Hall of Fame for that. I mean, a highly respected historian. I mean, maybe you need to put him in as a historian. I don't know. But, yeah, he's falls below my personal criteria there. Ted Turner's interesting. That's a name some people are very divisive on. Some people say absolutely, even though he was hands-off for the most part, you know, not involved in the day-to-day doings of wrestling. Without Ted Turner, man, wrestling's hugely different. And that's in that statement lies the crux of his case. Is that Hall of Fame worthy for you? Because if you take Ted Turner out of history, I mean, Georgia Championship Wrestling doesn't have national distribution, the rise of the cable networks, you know, they eventually are going to happen, but not the way or with the rapidity it did. Certainly WCW becomes a whole other thing. Jim Crockett Promotions goes out of business. I mean, and with it went Mid-South, UWF, because Crockett had bought them. Out goes Florida because Crockett had bought them. Out goes Central States because Crockett had bought them. So it was not just Crockett going out of business. It's Crockett, Central States, Mid-South, Florida, all that goes out of business. WWF is, I mean, gosh, you think about that. You think about circa 1989, 1990. WWF, Your wrestling world then is this. Ric Flair doesn't have that great 1989 trading the title with Ricky Steamboat. He doesn't have that great five-star feud with Terry Funk. The stage isn't set for what becomes WCW. You don't have, all that. What you have without Ted Turner is you have Jim Crockett Promotions is going out of business. You have then your wrestling world is WWF. Let's see, Continental's going out of business. You have a WWF, Memphis, and I just see it, right? I mean, AWA's out of business by close to that same point in time. They have that in Japan. I mean, my gosh, does wrestling even survive that? Especially when WWF then really, bottoms out with all the scandals and stuff in the early 1990s. I mean, WCW wouldn't do no great shakes either, but at least you had it there. There's some good stuff going on there periodically. But, man, can you imagine the world, the wrestling world without Ted Turner is a hugely different place. Is that enough, is that your criteria, though, to put him in the Hall of Fame? Because some people say, no, he's just a businessman. Even Dave, I think, has been against him. He's just a businessman. He's not, you know. He was never a booker. He never had put in any ideas about wrestling. He wasn't in the day-to-day operations. He was just the money. He was the person. And you could make the same case for a number of other promotions, too. Where did their money come from? Well, you take that away, and it changes. So it's an interesting question. It's a very interesting question. I have not voted for Ted Turner. I don't know that I would. But I think the question is fascinating, and I wouldn't say never. It's fascinating. The next one is an absolute, and not quite honestly, Roy Welch should have just been inducted. He should have been one of those candidates that, hey, we left you off the 1996 original induction as you know, historical people that they've gone and put in, you know, over time, like Colonel James H. McLaughlin, for one, where Dave just periodically inducts people just without voting because they should have been originally inducted. Roy Welch is one of those. Quite frankly, he shouldn't even be on this thing. So Roy Welch is, yes, a definite. He was so super influential. He was part, I mean, pro wrestling was part of not just popular culture in the Deep South, it was part of culture in the Deep South. From West Virginia all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico and from the Mississippi River east, wrestling is part of the culture here, especially in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. It was as much important as football or anything else. It was part of life, and everybody knew it, and Roy Welch was a huge, huge, important pioneer of it, no question. And then if you go back to the, well, Don Owens in, then there's no question Roy Welch is in. Yes, Roy Welch is in. He should be a shoe-in candidate. I can't fathom a world that we live in where he doesn't go in pretty easily. Stanley Weston, again, it's interesting. Stanley Weston's just kind of been left adrift at sea. Really, he and Bill Apter should have been inducted together. But that's not what happened. I think if you really want to make it right, you should probably vote in Stanley Weston. I'm not just super, like, you know, moved and morally motivated to do that, but I can say if it's only fair that he should be in there too. And then finally, the last name out here is, so the Grand Wizard Ernie Roth is before my time and out of my territory. You really need to, I guess we need to hear from fans of 1970s, early 1980s WWWF to talk about the Grand Wizard as a candidate, although I've never really heard that much conversation about him. To me, I, you know, obviously recognize the name, the character, and the outrageous costumes. You know, I picture him standing there while superstar Billy Graham cuts a promo or some of the other people he managed. And I think to myself, you know, seems like somebody that should be in, but I've just honestly never heard that much conversation about him. I guess having not seen him, and look, some of that era WWWF stuff was just so excruciatingly boring. I'm not saying there wasn't some Hall of Famers in there. Obviously, there were. But, man, there is nothing that I would find any more boring, quite frankly, than sitting around talking about, you know, Bob Backlund and whoever he's wrestling that week, Big John Studd or something, in a cage match, and the undercard of that being, you know, in some combination of Baron Mikel Cicluna and those guys, you know, S.D. Jones and Johnny Rods, and throw in the Grand Wizard and whatever. That just all was, man, I go through on the Ultimate History or the Long Form History of Pro Wrestling shows. We're in 1983 now, and some of those WWF shows are just excruciatingly boring. I don't know how in the world they drew for that stuff. And so you throw the Grand Wizard in there and put him in a wacky suit and a fez hat, and maybe he does stand out. I don't know. But Hall of Famer? Not entirely sure. So before we go, let's talk about the Robert Gibson paradox, because I think that's where we are in tag teams. We've kind of been left adrift to sea out here without much guidance from Dave about how we're supposed to consider tag teams. We've got a ton of them on the ballot this year, a ton of them being put on for the first time. Tag teams have always been really very unclear how to handle them. So you get what's called the Robert Gibson paradox, where people, I think it took them forever to get voted in. The Rock and Roll Express took them forever to get in to the Hall of Fame because people were just mad. Robert Gibson doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame. He's not a Hall of Fame caliber wrestler. My argument always was, well, the Rock and Roll Express was a Hall of Fame tag team act. They were a Hall of Fame wrestling act, the two of them together. Whatever you may think about one or the other, together they were super over, drew super well in multiple territories, had great high-level matches. They checked the boxes for a Hall of Fame. I'm sorry you don't like one of the guys. Okay, so we never have gotten any clarification since then, really. I mean, and even you could say the same thing about the Midnight Express, like Dennis Condrey. I like Dennis Condrey. Dennis Condrey was a good wrestler. Nobody had ever considered putting Dennis Condrey in solo in the Hall of Fame. Are people mad about Dennis Condrey being in the Hall of Fame? Probably a few, probably. So how do we do this? How do we judge a tag team? Because I'm already hearing chatter on the same thing. I've already seen some posts saying no to the Hart Foundation, because of Jim Neidhart. Jim Neidhart doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame. And as a solo wrestler, as a standalone person, no, I don't think he does either. But in my opinion, the Hart Foundation is a Hall of Fame tag team act. The duo, and especially throw Jimmy Hart in there, yeah, I think they are. Same for the British Bulldogs. Is Davey Boy Smith a solo Hall of Fame act? I don't think by itself he is, but with the British Bulldogs as an act, certainly. Dynamite Kid's already in. And I think that's part of the problem. Some wrestlers have this, or some voters, rather, have this real hesitation to have one person go in twice to the Hall of Fame, and I don't think it has to be looked at that way. I don't think you put the British Bulldogs in and say Dynamite Kid's in the Hall of Fame twice. No, Dynamite Kid's in the Hall of Fame once. The British Bulldogs as an act are in the Hall of Fame once. Okay? I mean, kudos to the fact that one of those guys has twice in their career risen to a Hall of Fame level. Good for them. Bret Hart, same thing. Hey, I don't think you say Bret Hart's in the Hall of Fame twice. I say you say Bret Hart's in the Hall of Fame once, and the Hart Foundation's in the Hall of Fame, because I think both those acts considered separately are Hall of Fame acts. To me, it would be almost, I'm trying to think of a situation where this might be the case, and I'm sure there are some, but off the top of my head, you think of like, well, I'll tell you one in music. Phil Collins and Genesis, okay, are both. Is Phil Collins a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame act? Unquestionably, in my mind, he is. Whether you like Phil Collins or not, check all those boxes. Certainly, he is. I don't even remember. I think Genesis got in. Then they were having the same problem. They were like, well, that's basically inducting Phil Collins in twice. And again, I say, no, it's not. It's inducting Genesis once and Phil Collins once. And that's appropriate, if that's the case. And there are probably other acts to consider. Stevie Nicks and Fleetwood Mac would be another one. And there will be several instances of people that were in Hall of Fame bands who then one member of that band went solo and reached Hall of Fame criteria for their solo act. And I feel like that's appropriate. I don't feel like you say Stevie Nicks is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame twice, even though technically that's true. Again, you say Stevie Nicks is in, and so is Fleetwood Mac, and I think you say the same thing at Bret Hart and the Hart Foundation, or Dynamite Kid and the British Bulldogs, or the fact that Robert Gibson's in there. I mean, John McVie was a good bass player, but he wasn't all that shakes. You know, there are plenty of bass players that would play loops around John McVie, but I don't hear people going, man, I'll tell you what, that Fleetwood Mac sure shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame because John McVie is a middle-of-the-road bass player. Nobody's saying that. He's part of the act. And wrestling, I think, should get over itself a little bit on that. That's just my opinion. Yours may differ, and you're well you know, worth, well, welcome to your opinion. But that's just my opinion. I have no problem completely separating the two. I don't even consider if I vote for the British Bulldogs, and I probably will, I will not in any way consider whether Dynamite Kid's already in or not, nor should, you know, Davy Boy Smith be in the Hall of Fame. Now, I will consider the British Bulldogs based on their act alone. Same thing with the Hart Foundation or Antonino Rocca and Miguel Perez. Boy, that Miguel Perez, he sure doesn't need to be in the Hall of Fame. No, but absolutely, Rocca and Perez together as an act, absolutely, probably more so than anybody on the ballot, in my opinion. So I have no problem differentiating the two, no more than I have a problem differentiating between Stevie Nicks and Fleetwood Mac and Phil Collins and Genesis and whomever else you can think of that fall into similar circumstances. So that's just my opinion. You may disagree, and that's all fine too. We can still be friends here, and I hope you'll be friendly enough to visit me over at my website, whenitwascool.com. We sure do need your Patreon support. I'd love to get back to work on the Ultimate History of Pro Wrestling Timeline. I think it is a valuable resource, and once it is, has, I would say, about another year's worth of work to it, I think it's going to be one of the top internet resources. But I can't justify the amount of time I'm putting into that, the amount of work. I'm putting about 100 pages a month into that. Like, literal, if you printed them out on a piece of paper, 100 pages worth of information into that timeline a month. That is a huge time investment. Now, people at whenitwascool.com are really supporting our podcast, and we get lots of feedback and conversation on them, but I'm having a hard time justifying all the time I'm putting in that zone. So if you think that is good, if you think it's necessary, if you think that is a interesting way of preserving pro wrestling history, and I hope you do, I hope you consider supporting us, even if you're even if you're not a big podcast listener, you're listening to one right now, I hope you'll check ours out. I think we've got some great quality stuff. And it's not just pro wrestling history. That's not all we do. That is just a segment of what we do. We do retro pop culture. That means that old TV show you liked, we talk about it. That old movie you like, we talk about that. That old sports team you like, that old music you enjoy, those are all topics we discuss at whenitwascool.com. I hope you'll check us out. Go to whenitwascool.com, place a bookmark on us, and ultimately, I hope you'll choose one of our multiple Patreon packages to support us, and I will see you back here soon with another show. Get those ballots in.
We depend on Patreon support for our website and podcast network. In order to continue these podcasts you enjoy, we need you to visit whenitwascool.com and pledge at least $1. You'll gain access to lots of exclusive podcasts, newsletters, and more. Sign up is quick, simple, and can be canceled at any time. whenitwascool.com and click any Patreon link. Thank you.